across the UK, Overnights with Paul Ross.
Now, there was a time, not very long ago, that the nation thrilled to the roar of motorbikes and got high on a helicopter of speed and danger. Danger and speed and skill. And I was there. Because there was a time when speedway was the UK's second most popular spectator sport. And here, my friends, is why.
Hackney Speedway Stadium. The new racing season was only days away when the stars of the East London Cinder Circuit put in one of their last tough training sessions before their home match against Wolverhampton. Captain Colin Pratt got set for a practice race with his three teammates. Training sessions like this were taking place all over the country as the daring young men on their souped-up machines tried to hit top form before the starting tapes launched them into the 1968 Speedway season. Millions of fans get their thrills watching men like these in action. The riders put everything they've got into their racing. Sometimes it's just a bit too much.
Now, these days, the attendance may be down, but Speedway is far from being out. In fact, a very real revival has been underway for several years now. A bounce back blighted, though, of course, by the pandemic. And the impact of that lost, shutdown season is the subject of a brilliant new book by Roddy McDougall, author of No Breaks, published by Pitch, who joins us now. Good morning, Roddy, and thanks for doing this for us, matey. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Delighted to be able to speak to you.
And let's start, please, with a reminder, if you will, those people who are not of an age, how big Speedway used to be in the UK.
Yeah, I think Speedway's probably in Britain has had two golden years. The first was immediately after the Second World War, when I think Wembley Stadium, it used to be a sort of famous club based at Wembley, and I think they had more than a million spectators in one season.
Wow.
It carried on into the early 50s, and then it took a little bit of a dive as people got TV sets. I think as stock car racing came in as well, that took away a bit of the attendances. It then revived again in the 60s, I think possibly largely down to sort of ITV World of Sport, Dickie Davis, Dave Lanning, the commentaries. It was always a sort of staple on Saturday afternoons. And even up until the 1981 World Final at Wembley, which had, I think, a capacity 92,000 crowd,
yeah,
it was still a big sport. Since then, its popularity in this country has slightly fallen away, sort of decade by decade.
And also, we've lost so many of the great old Speedway grounds and tracks. I mean, I remember first going along when I was probably 10 or 11, taking on my dad and my uncle. And then in the 70s, I was still going because it was that rare thing, because of the glamour and the danger, I think, maybe, and because some of these guys were pin-ups and they were risking their lives, effectively, it was something that girls used to follow as well. You know, young women in London would follow and enjoy as well, which wasn't true, for example, as much in those days of football.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, one of the things that I really like about Speedway is the family atmosphere, the community feel to it. It's a sport with a real heart, which sounds a bit of a cliche, but any of your listeners who go along to Speedway will know that the people who run it, they're doing it not to make money, they're doing it for the love of the sport, and that also transcends into the communities as well. I mean, you mentioned tracks that have gone. I mean, the likes of Long Eaton, Ellesmere, Port, Boston, Weymouth, towns and cities, you know, towns up and down the country, which perhaps wouldn't necessarily have had national coverage, but managed to get it because of Speedway, and sadly, that's now gone.
Now, you start the book by sketching that glorious past, and of course, it is a glorious past, and it's still with us today. But then, of course, we've had the most devastating year for so many sports, so many areas of our daily lives and of our leisure lives. Is it possible to give us an overview of how blighting the pandemic was for Speedway last year?
It was really tough. I mean, I think I'm right in saying, I may get the figure slightly wrong, but I think there were probably about 15 meetings took place last year, none of them at what you would call the very sort of top premiership level. I think the sort of downwind of that is that it's obviously gone into this season as well. We had Somerset, who unfortunately have now been lost to the sport. So, you know, the West Country, where you used to have Exeter, you used to have Newport, Bristol, Somerset now have gone. So that's become a bit of a, apart from Plymouth, must mention Plymouth. Apart from Plymouth, that's the only club riding there.
Well, when I trained on local papers back in the late 70s, early 80s in Exeter, one of my duties was to go along to the old county ground and cover the Exeter Falcons. And it was a fantastically exciting night. And that's the thing, it's such an exciting sport. For those who don't know, I mean, your book's called No Breaks, spelled B-R-E-A-K-S, published by Pitch. Great read, folks. A lost season in British Speedway. But it also could be No Breaks, couldn't it? Spelt as in car or motorbike brakes. Tell us what's different about Speedway and about the vehicles or the machines these young men straddle.
It is indeed No Breaks because they don't have any brakes. They travel at speeds of up to 70 miles an hour, four laps of an oval circuit, always turning left, and they're sort of using their skill, their bravery and their legs to basically navigate round the corners. So the races are very short. They're, you know, somewhere around about a minute in length. And as you said, Paul, very, very brave riders who risk, you know, life and limb every time they go out on the bike for our entertainment.
And you've got some amazing photographs in the book. Did you take those yourself, Ronnie?
Quite a lot of them were, yes, because the plan for the book originally was sort of, in a sense, I've always believed that there are stories to be told to a wider audience outside just the possibly narrow Speedway world of the riders, the promoters, the people who run the clubs, the supporters and the sponsors. I believe there were stories to tell to a wider audience to say, listen, Speedway is still going and it's still worth a look. On its day, for me, I think it's the most exciting sport there is. Obviously, the plan was to go around some of the tracks, some of the training tracks, some of the meetings. Clearly, when COVID happened in March last year, that just sort of blew plans out of the water. Compared to what lots of people went through, that was obviously a very, very minor thing. But it did mean that I had to just sort of obviously change the book halfway through, as it were.
I mean, the fascinating thing for me about the book is about how thoroughly, obviously, over the years, you've immersed yourself in that world. But also, you paint a picture of it being a kind of, not a gateway, actually, because it's an end in itself, but it's very much, I think, the working man and woman's motorsport, like stock car racing, even like banger racing.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think in some ways, maybe it's a slightly angled view, but I do think there's a certain sort of snootiness towards Speedway in some circles that, oh, it's full of kind of, oh, motorbike types. I think I mentioned that in the book.
Of course it's motorbike types.
yeah, it's motorbike types, and they're loud and they're noisy and they're violent, whatever. And actually the demographic of a Speedway supporter is actually probably older. And I think that's one of the problems that's facing British Speedway, that it does really need to try and attract a younger generation. But I do think that, you know, some people kind of slightly look down on the sport. And as a said a few minutes ago, for me, it's a sport with a real heart. I do feel it's almost kind of Britain's left behind sport in many ways.
Well, it is curious how it's not fallen hugely, but it has fallen considerably. And I do wonder what you think the current state of it is, Roddy. How healthy is Speedway at the moment after what we've all been through?
It's a mixed picture, Paul. I mean, on the plus side, we've got Eurosport, who I think everyone now after the Olympics has realised are perhaps not, with the greatest of respect, the sort of poor relation in sports companies, sports TV companies that they were maybe 10 years ago. They have the rights to the Olympics. They have the rights to the Tour de France. They're really building up a stable of sports in motorcycling. They have just started a five-year contract showing top league Speedway in Britain. I think at international level, British Speedway is in a really, really good state. Two of the best riders, probably two of the best 6-8 riders in the world are Ty Woffenden, who's won the World Championship three times, and Robert Lambert, who was last year's European champion. On the debit side, Woffenden and Lambert don't race in Britain anymore. They race in Poland. Poland is far and away the king of world speedway. The TV contracts are worth more. The pay is several times better than it is in the UK. The demographic is much younger. It attracts... It, I was planning to go last summer before COVID intervened, but I've spoken to people who've been there, and they say that going to a top league game in Poland is a bit like going to a football game here. You know, you do have away fans are penned into one area. There is, in a sense, a real sort of rivalry there that you don't get. And also, I think, crucially, going back to what you were talking about speedway tracks having closed down, in Poland, councils are very proud of their tracks and the publicity that they bring to the area. So they're much more likely to provide financial help than councils over in Britain.
Now, I learned something new from the book. Many things, in fact. It's a great read, folks. We're talking to Roddy McDougall, whose book, No Breaks, A Lost Season in British Speedway, is out now by Pitch Publishing. A great read. I didn't realise there was a National Speedway Museum. And you've got a great photograph of a guy called Bert Harkins surrounded by a treasure trove of speedway memorabilia. I mean, people absolutely love this sport, don't they?
They do. And if there's any Speedway fans listening who've not been, please do go and visit the National Speedway Museum. It's at Paradise Wildlife Park in Hertfordshire, which sounds on the face of it like a strange place for a Speedway museum. There is a link that I won't go into just now, but when you know it, it's perfectly natural. Bert is a really nice bloke. He's like me. He's a Scot, raced for the Edinburgh Monarchs, which was my team from way back. And I had a tremendous morning, funnily enough, in February last year, so before the pandemic, being shown round the bikes, the colours, the programmes. It's a veritable cornucopia of speedway memorabilia.
And a great use of the word cornucopia there. The other great thing about the book is you talk a lot about the future. I'm looking at a photograph of a young woman called Katie Gordon, 16 years old. Now, I mentioned female speedway fans, and I didn't want to sound like a sexist 70s teenager, but of course it is a sport that more and more women are getting involved in, and young Katie is determined to become the first woman rider in the top leagues. I mean, that's an indication to me that this sport really has a future.
I think the emergence of women riders, now whether that's as part of teams with men or whether it's separately, is one of the keys to British Speedway surviving and prospering in this country. You've seen what's happened with women in boxing, women in darts. Over the last few years, the publicity boost that it has given to those sports. And I just think we've now reached the stage, it's the third decade of the 21st century. Speedway in this country will actually celebrate its centenary in 2028. And I would hope that more women can come in to the sport and just, as I said, just give it a little bit more publicity than it gets. Obviously, it gets Eurosport. I know that TalkSport yourselves, you cover it. It gets niche coverage, but it's sort of fallen away in mainstream, and I think that's a great shame.
I didn't realise either until I read the book that Speedway Star, the publication, was still going.
It is, absolutely.
Okay, now, with my other hat on, as a journo, former broadcaster on telly and stuff, you're hugely well known in that industry, Roddy. I mean, you've worked all kinds of places, really senior news editor, TVAM, ITN, GMTV. What is it about Speedway finally that has captured your imagination and your heart so much?
I think you put your finger on it at the very start of the conversation, Paul. I think it's a mix of the bravery of the riders, the skill of the riders. It's being there. It's getting the smell of the burnt methanol, the fuel that they use for the bikes. There are 15 races in a meeting, and if you get a track that's well prepared, if you get riders who are going for it, it's the most exciting sport there is. I think I mentioned in the book there was one Grand Prix last year where the lead changed hands six times in 19 seconds.
I know, wow.
There is no other sport that I can think of where that happens, where you get someone leading on one corner and someone comes in on the other. Now, it doesn't happen every race, don't get me wrong.
No.
But then we've all sat through 0-0 draws. We've all watched rugby where the scrum collapses every minute or so. It does happen when the track's not great or whatever, but on its day, Speedway for me, and I love my football, I love other sports as well, Speedway for me is the most exciting sport there is.
Also, Roddy, I noticed from the front of the book, the royalties are being donated to a very special cause indeed. It's the Speedway Riders Benevolent Fund. Tell us about that, please, if you would, because this is a ferociously dangerous sport at times.
That's right. The Speedway Riders Benevolent Fund, as far as I'm aware, I think is the only charity in the world that basically every penny that goes to it goes towards injured riders. So that could be riders who are out of action for a couple of weeks, because Speedway is the sort of the ultimate pay-as-you-earn, pay-as-you-ride sport. You don't get paid effectively if you don't score points for the team. So obviously, if you're not riding, if you're injured, there's no money coming in. And the Speedway Riders Benevolent Fund will look after riders, not just in the short term, but also those who, sadly, every so often, there will be riders who will get what I think we now know as life-changing injuries. And the Speedway Riders Benevolent Fund are there for them. It's a terrific organisation.
The man speaking there is Roddy McDougall. The book's called No Breaks, B-R-E-A-K-S, A Lost Season in British Speedway. Sounds to me like the future's bright. It's published by Pitch. And let's hope and pray that Speedway will get back to the ascendancy it once enjoyed, certainly in the 1960s, at the World Speedway event in Wembley. Let's take you back there right now. Cheers, Roddy.
Wembley, the most coveted trophy in the Speedway world, the Champion Shield. There to do battle for it, where the cream of the world's Zinder Circuit riders from Russia, Sweden, Britain, Poland, New Zealand, in fact, anywhere where they ride Speedway style. Barry Briggs, four times world champ. Russia's Igor Plechanov. And a man of the evening, Ove Fundin of Sweden. 75,000 were there to see the battle of the Speedway giants as they roared away in the qualifying heats.